This tape at a meeting of the Oregon Chapter, University of Alaska Alumni Association, held in Portland, Oregon on November 7, 1970. The story I will relate has to do with changing the name from Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines to the University of Alaska. I was president of the Alumni Association, and Dr. Bunnell called me and requested that the Alumni Association draw up a resolution requesting the change. This was done, and we presume it was used at the territorial legislature when the change was requested. Period. That's all. Right.
27. It's a little difficult right off the cuff to recall the many things that happened during the early days of the university, or the Agricultural College and School of Mines, as it was called at that time. But my first experience with Dr. Bunnell was the first day I went out to inquire about the college. And the first chap I asked, he said, well, the president is actually down in the boiler house. So I went down the boiler house and I found the president helping the firemen to shovel out the remaining sand out of the back end of the boiler room so they could put in some wood to fire the boiler. They hadn't been able to fire it, only a little bit in the early morning, take the chill off, but at that time I was about a month late in starting. Life at that time was this general small school atmosphere. Each year during the meeting of the difficult at my age to grasp, get my thoughts out of my tongue, but the grand jury, that's what I was trying to reach. Each year the grand jury would come out to visit the university, and regardless of what class we were having at that time, the word would be passed to the professors that we had to go down and pull a chemistry lab because that looked a little more impressive to them. And not knowing much about it at that time, after only a month or two in school, we'd all put a bunch of stuff in a test tube and we had smoke going, and the people would look in the door and cough a little bit, and we'd all look kind of serious and as if we knew something. But that, I think, helped a little bit to impress on the people that the university was something that was going to stay. And I don't recall, as I mentioned, it sometimes it requires four or five fellas getting together over a bottle of scotch to remember all these things. And I suppose the only claim I have to fame is that after hearing all the stories the fellas told about Bunnell, I still think I put more gray hairs on his head than anyone. And yet we all had a great admiration for him because he was always good for a loan of a few dollars or a little friendly advice, which we all needed at that time. Thank you. I learned a few things about coal shoveling, freight handling, barbering, clothes pressing, and a number of other activities and chasing the dollar. But there's one thing I've been curious about and I've never been satisfied on. I was in front of the old building and Judge Bunnell and Larry Gasser were there standing on the gravel, and I was looking in the wrong direction, but just as I turned it appeared that Judge Bunnell was landing on his feet as though he had turned a back somersault, and I've always wondered if he'd been an athlete of some sort. That's about my greatest curiosity in connection with the college. Thank you.
Finished at the high school in Fairbanks, and at that time politics were very hot and heavy. As it happened, Judge Bunnell was a Democrat, and a lot of the people who were Republicans were anything but in favor of his getting the presidency of the college. So I remember just after graduation, my father came home and said he had met the father of one of my fellow graduates from the college, from the high school, and he said to him, well, are you going to send Jim to the college? And he said to him, Roth, that college isn't good enough for my son. Well, I didn't see that son. We graduated in 1922, for many, 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 many years. He stopped at our house not too long ago, and I said to him, Jim, how long did you stay in the University of Washington? And he said, one semester. The rest of us all survived at the college. Now, we could not have done it without Judge Monell, because all of us were going on a shoestring, and a darn rotten shoestring at that. We didn't have any money at all. And he would come along with lunch tickets. I remember Mrs. Sullivan had the lunch. And he would put them in our laps or something equally, something that was real good. We didn't even have the lunch from the bakery, from Rapholz Bakery or from Priest's Bakery that I remember Marchand with that eternal, infernal cheese sandwich and one cookie that we sat there on the cornerstone and ate. We would bring our own, and I remember our own lunches, and I remember the Loftus boys had some very interesting concoctions. They had sourdough hotcakes, sometimes filled with mush, and once in a while they would vary it. Perhaps they'd been to the agriculture college, or they would fill them with maybe cabbage, tastefully put in between these sourdough hotcakes. Well, I went more for perhaps mustard sandwiches or ketchup sandwiches, and those were pretty tasty too. So when President Bunnell or Judge Bunnell would come along with a handful of lunch tickets to eat inside, something warm and something to drink, it was something I shall never forget. He participated. I used to play. We'd gather around the piano and we'd sing. He'd go down and get his trombone, and he'd come. He just dearly loved. He wanted to be with all of us, do what we all did, and it was really a privilege to be one. When I see these huge campuses and nobody really gives much of a hoot about each individual, then we were important. And what we needed, somebody helped us do, mostly Judge Bunnell. Thanks.
Okay, now go ahead.
That was Dorothy Roth Loftus, class of 27.
Yeah.
This is Jim Ryan. I went to the University of Alaska, or rather the Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines, in the fall of 1928. I had a most imposing title. I believe that the catalog said that I was Professor of Education and Psychology, Director of Athletics, and Instructor in Physical Education. I tried my best to do all of those things, and sometimes I met myself, my coattail, going around the corners. I think that one of the things that had the great impression upon my life was the fact that I met Dr. Bunnell and came to know him and came to love him as a great man. Dr. Bunnell was a great man, and no one who has ever been remotely connected with the university can doubt that for a moment. Whether they went there in 1922 when the school was established, or whether they were there in 1970, his persistence and his courage is well known. But Dr. Bunnell was a man of many moods, as well as many of you know from firsthand experience. When you went there, there was no question about who was running the place. And if you had any question, you were very soon put right. The college was very small, and the staff was very small, and it was the custom for Dr. Bunnell to have each of the faculty members for dinner at least once during the year. And it was also the custom then that each of the faculty families at least would have Dr. Bunnell for a dinner, and sometimes maybe twice a year. But many is the time, apparently Dr. Bunnell didn't keep too good records about his social engagements, because many of the time, along about 6 o'clock in the evening, Mrs. Keyes, who was then his secretary, would call up and say, is Dr. Bunnell there? No. Well, do you expect him? Well, no. Do you know where he is? Sometimes we did know where he was supposed to be, and we'd supply the information, or sometimes, fortunately, she would hit on the place and he would be there. It was simply Mrs. T's way of trying to find out for Dr. Bunnell where he had to go to dinner. I don't know whether this story is appropriate for Bill or not, and whether he would want to put it in his book or not, but it also says a great deal to me about the character of the man and the greatness of the man. I went into the office one morning to see Dr. Bunnell on some little affair, and Mrs. Keyes told me that Dr. Bunnell was tied up and would be for some time, that Judge Wickersham was visiting, and they were in the office talking. And as you know, Judge Wickersham and Dr. Bunnell were not exactly on the friendliest terms politically. I think it dated back to the time when Dr. Bunnell, as a Democrat, and Judge Wickersham, as a Republican, ran for a delegate to Congress. And as I was stood there talking with Mrs. Keyes, while the door opened, and Judge Wickersham and Dr. Bunnell came out and walked through the office. And Judge Wickersham was saying to Dr. Bunnell, "Nothing, my dear Dr. Bunnell, is dearer to my heart than this college." And Dr. Bunnell, in a very broad smile, says, "I know that, Judge Wickersham. I've known that for years." And then they went out into the hall, and quickly Dr. Bunnell opened the door, stepped back into the office, and closed the door, and looked over at Mrs. Keyes and me and winked and said, "That old devil needs to think and get ahead of me."
I'm not certain that I can add a whole lot, but perhaps I can give a viewpoint of one who didn't live on campus, who didn't live in the dormitories, but who rather lived in a shack out in the brush and wouldn't have had an opportunity to go to school even under those circumstances without Dr. Bunnell. I'm Bob Duncan. I went to school up there during 39 and 40. And I never realized really why, until today, why I have always admired Dr. Bunnell so much and why we seem to have so much in common, until I learned today that he was a Democrat, and that explains everything. He just had to be a great guy under those circumstances. My friend and I, after bumming up from during the Depression from down in the States, walked out from Fairbanks to the campus one morning and ran into this same chap in muddy boots, this time with the same shovel in his hand, I suppose, only instead of shoveling sand, he was mucking out something in front of the building. And we, of course, asked, as I'm sure many others have, where we could find the president. We wanted to talk about going to school, and he said, "Well, he'll be inside the building in a little bit." And directly we met this same old guy in muddy boots and sat there and talked to him for, I suppose, an hour or perhaps even two. At which point he explained to me at one point that he had been an athlete. As a matter of fact, he told me that he had caught Christy Mathewson during the days both of them attended Bucknell Academy in New York. And that again gave us a bond of friendship, because I at that time thought I was on my way to being a major league ball player and also a catcher. We had, as we approached the campus, noticed at the foot of those big long steps, an old shack that looked like a tool shack. It's sitting there where now a four-lane highway with brightly lighted goes through. And we kind of laughed at it as we went by and wondered why somebody didn't burn it up. Well, thanks to Dr. Bunnell, within about 2 hours, my friend and I, Ted Cox, were living in that shack. And we lived in it through the winter of that particular season. There were others of us. Ernie Wolf and Ray Smith and a fellow named Lloyd lived back on Dead Man's Slough in an old cabin, again, put up there through the kindness of Dr. Bunnell. Dr. Bunnell asked us to go to work on this Allison building, which we now learn with some sadness is about to be torn down. And our job was salvaging the lumber that had been used for form, so as to save the freight bringing more lumber up from the States. And we got all the nails pulled out of it, and he said, "Well, boys, now we got to have it inside. We got to get it out of the weather." So we moved it inside to the place where he designated. We got it all stacked up neatly there, and he came down. He said, "Boys," he said, "I'm sorry, I made a terrible mistake. It's got to go up on the third floor." And at that point, we began to have doubts about his sanity. But we moved it up on the third floor, and he came up, and he said, "Boys, I don't know what's the matter with me. I'm just not planning well. It's got to go down on the second floor." Wasn't until many years later that I really realized he didn't give a damn where that lumber was stacked. He was keeping us in beans and flour through the winter. He had also, as he put us up in these cabins, Ernie Wolfe and myself and our friends, had told us that we could cut all the spruce that we wanted for firewood, but that we were under no circumstances to touch that birch. And then periodically, you know, he'd come down and visit us. Just as he'd have the faculty over to his house, he'd come down to this little shack in the brush and share our sourdough and our caribou and whatever else we happened to have. And I can remember on a Saturday evening, we'd all gone back to on Dead Man's Slough to that cabin for dinner. And directly, Dr. Bunnell came in uninvited, and of course, we were kind of surprised, and we were two-thirds afraid of him. And he sat down, joined us, ate our dinner with us. And as he got up and put on his parka to trudge back up to the campus, he said, "Boys," he says, "that birch makes pretty good fire, doesn't it?" And we says, "It sure does, Judge." Well, he's a great guy, and I couldn't agree more. He's one of the people, I think, who has had a great influence on my life, and I'm sure on all of us in this room. Thank you.
This is Iris Ryan. I didn't expect to say anything. I'm not much given to speaking in public. But it has been mentioned around the edges that Dr. Bunnell was something of an athlete. And some of us know that he was quite a football player in his college days. And I remember one time in our very early years at the college, when we were having dinner in the college dining room, which in those days was in the basement of the girls' dormitory, obviously the basketball team had just won a victory of some kind. I think that must be what brought on this demonstration. But during the dinner hour, Dr. Bunnell made a little speech and showed us his football uniform, which he had preserved from his days at Bucknell. He showed it with great pride, and it was a little moth-eaten around the edges. But and obviously he was sorry that he wasn't able to demonstrate by putting it on, but that wasn't possible anymore. But he did show it, and I thought you might be interested in knowing that he had made that demonstration to the students in the dining room.
Well, we were poor homesteaders. My father homesteaded out on the Steel Creek Road, and I remember one time when Dr. Bunnell and his current driver, Herb Brazil, came out to see us. And we didn't know that he cared anything about us, but I guess he'd heard that we were in little desperate straits. And he visited with us and had such a nice time talking. Then he said, "Well, would any of you girls like to have a job?" My sister Irma was kind of hard up and wanting a job. And so that summer was when they were building the new power plant. The old one had burned down, and they were building the new one. And so Irma went to work as a waitress in the dining room that Mrs. Ryan was saying was in the basement of the girls' dormitory. And so Irma was a waitress there in that building, and she had never done anything like this before, but it was kind of interesting to her. Some of the guys there that worked on that power plant, they all got names by the girls. One fellow used to reach clear across the table, and they called him the drag line. But anyway, then a little later on, Dr. Bunnell came out to see us again on the homestead, and he asked my mother if she'd like a job. And he said, "Our laundress is quitting. Would you like to come take the job as laundress?" And so Mother said, yes, she would like that. And we lived in that old Eielson building you're talking about. The old college laundry was in that, it was called Unit 5 in those days. And we lived in the basement of Unit 5 while my mother and Irma ran the laundry. Irma was going to college, and I was taking the bus into Fairbanks to high school. And so we used to see quite a bit of Dr. Bunnell. He'd stop by and see how we were coming along and say, "Mrs. Fitz, how are you doing with the laundry?" and so on and so forth. And we'd hear the boys upstairs in Unit 5. Once in a while, they'd get on a rampage and come tearing down the stairs. And and they'd come in and visit with us there in the laundry. And then Dr. Bunnell would send for things, and he still had Herb Brazil as his driver, and I used to ride down with Herb down to the little old railroad station there at college, where we'd pick up things that needed to be picked up, or the mail, or different things like that. So we used to see quite a bit of Dr. Bunnell. And then later on, I went to college at the university, the year 40-41. And so Dr. Bunnell was like an old friend to me because I had known him when I was younger, and he'd been so kind to my family.
And what's your name?
I'm Maxine Fritz, and I used to be Maxine Fitz.
Hi, Bill. This is Paul Wickstrom. Wick, as you know, I knew him. I had to come up here and say hello anyway, if I don't give you anything to write about. But I know that your book will be a big success, Bill, because I know that you've got a lot of good writing ability. There was one thing that I think we're all conscious of, and that is that Dr. Bunnell no doubt got a lot of headaches from a lot of the college students around there, but he had the fortitude to take these headaches, and I know there was one thing that must have bothered him pretty bad, because all of a sudden this thing disappeared. But this was that old foghorn that we had in the dormitory. You probably remember that thing. The freshman had to blow that thing in the morning to wake everybody up, and I think it not only woke up the men in the dormitory, but probably everybody on the whole campus. And I think the noise even got down to the judge's place, and I heard the rumor that he was the instigator of the disappearance of that thing, but I never did hear the real facts on it. Well, anyway, Bill, that's all I've got to say right now, and good luck to you on your book.
Well, everybody said that I've been doing a lot of talking up until now, and this is Alice Nordell Cooey. Hi, Bill. Remember when? I think probably it would be better if I were to go back to the time that the Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines first started out. I was the little seven-year-old that handed the flowers to President Bunnell and Mrs. Bunnell when the ribbon was cut. So I'll say no more.
This is Audrey Loftus. There aren't too many things left on campus to remind people of President Bunnell, except the plaque in the Bunnell building, which was a memorial plaque given by the University of Alaska alumni, and a lovely grove of birch trees which President Bunnell had the students plant in the very earliest days of the college, and I'm proud to say that the Loftus boys planted the birch which you see as you drive onto the campus. I've heard many people say that President Bunnell should have not married, because the university was his one love, and that he had no time or room in his heart for a wife and family. I think one day I had my mind changed on that. I was going down the hall and he called me into the office, and he was looking very sad, and he said, Audrey, I have just heard that my wife died today. And he talked to me perhaps a half an hour about his wife and about Jean and about his life and how they had grown apart simply because he had been so busy, and he had gradually let the university take over that part of his life. But he showed such a great deal of affection still for Jean in particular and his wife, and a feeling of responsibility for his wife, which I had not known that he had. Thank you.
I just wanted to say, in closing, thank you all. And we want to thank Frank Barr, who brought his recorder today and made the tape for Bill. Frank's an old-time bush pilot in Fairbanks, former legislator, and also a delegate to the Constitutional Convention. We're glad to have you here today, Frank. Thank you.